This is Scripture Read Badly,
a podcast where two grown-up pastors' kids discuss the stories of the Bible in chronological order,
attempting to avoid heresy and generally having a good time.
I'm Jeremy.
And I'm Ryan.
Sit back and rejoice.
Today's verse comes from Mark chapter 8, verse 16. And they began discussing with one another the fact that they had no bread. This is the first instance of somebody being gluten-free in the Bible and telling people about it and having people not understand. But it was the beginning of a trend which continues to this very day. My name is Ryan. Welcome to Scripture Read Badly.
And I'm Jeremy. And maybe they were talking about bread as in money, like the hippies used to say, like, whoa, man, we have no bread. Anyway, today we are going to talk about discipleship, the whys, the why nots, and the backgrounds of it. And I'd like to start by talking about how it's one of the last things Jesus told us to do, right?
Yes.
Like, go and make disciples of men. Mm-hmm. And some people have translated that to be, go and tell people about Jesus and then walk away from them. Don't really do anything other than that. And so we've seen churches start and churches just continue talking about the door gospel, like how do you become a Christian, but
yeah,
not really talk about what happens after you get into the door. And it's interesting too, when you're a young person, when you've got youth groups and stuff, in youth group you get discipleship, you get one-on-one mentorship a lot of the time, you have friendship groups, you go on adventures.
Yep.
But after you become a quote-unquote adult, that kind of thing stops. And some churches have men's groups, women's groups, stuff like this. And sometimes in some areas of the world that's quite unique. It doesn't happen everywhere. But it seems at large, that it doesn't happen so much. That there's not much one-on-one discipleship. There's not much even from the pulpit discipleship, because
right,
how do you disciple unique individuals when you're throwing one message out to 100 to 20,000 people? And why is that? And what would change in the world if we were disciples and discipled and disciplers? And yep, what stops us from doing those three things? So, would you like to comment on any of that I just said?
Sure. I'll comment on something that was a minor point that you made, which will not be the rest of the episode.
Okay.
But it is when you talked about discipleship from the pulpit and how that doesn't often happen as much as it should. I am reminded of the passage in one of the epistles. Don't remember which. I read scripture badly, remember? And
I do too.
It says that I think Paul emphasizes the need for people to be fed meat as opposed to milk. Kind of simple theology versus more the deeper stuff. And how you don't feed a baby meat, but also you don't feed a grown-up milk. And it kind of, it's not how you help somebody grow. You feed them milk until a certain point and then they eat meat. And that's kind of, I mean, I'm sure there are different vegetarian and vegan options available, but as far as the gospel goes, the basic things, getting them in the door, like you said, is important. It's the milk. But then there's also the need for meat. You need to learn. You need to keep learning. You can't just rehear the same entry-level gospel message every week. I mean, it can continue to transform your life, but at the same time, it's not conducive to growth. So, preachers need to... I recognize that it's a hard balance for a lot of preachers to find, to have that entry message at the same time as having something that people learn from. And I think the trap that people often fall into is that they compromise on both ends and they kind of meet in the middle, and people that are not familiar with the lingo or the theology at all get confused because the concepts they are discussing are deeper or more intricate than the broader things that appeal to more people. And that kind of prevents them from necessarily fully understanding the message. But then on the other hand, you get people that are sitting in the congregation who want the really deep stuff. They want inductive Bible study in a church service, and they don't get that because the preacher needs to keep it as just a basic Bible study in case there are people there that haven't heard it before. So, as far as discipleship from the pulpit goes, I think there are opportunities for people to receive different messages in different contexts, whether that is having two services a week. One is more focused towards getting people into the church, and the other is more focused on helping people learn. Or that could be two services on the one day, it could be a couple of days a week, it could be more of a you come to church for the entry level stuff and then you go to a Bible study or a connect group for the deeper stuff. But either way, I recognize that it's a very delicate balance that needs to be found to appeal to the masses at the same time as continuing to help those in your flock to grow. So discipleship from the pulpit is tricky, but I think it's possible. And I think I think discipleship, good discipleship from the pulpit is possible, not just bare level stuff.
No. And the small group thing is interesting to me because if you gather the small group in age or maturity, and then from the pulpit, something universal is thrown out, like how does God see how we use speech, or how does God see how we use our money, or how does God see how we treat such and such? And then in your small groups, in your maturity or your age level, it's discussed, then you can go deeper, then you can go lighter, bloody, bloody.
Yeah.
But then the attraction to me of larger church is that you have different maturity levels. And so you have the older people, you have the younger people, you have the boys, the girls, the different, from different countries.
Yep.
And that's what's always, like, I'm attracted to the idea of, like, skateboard church where you just group up a whole bunch of skaters and they do church together. But then I'm also very attracted to like old person church where you have lots of old people around who have been a Christian for 70 years. And so discipleship from the pulpit is always so interesting to me, especially if it's the same guy every single time. You don't get to mix it up so much, and if you don't have small groups to discuss, and at the church that I'm currently a part of, we have like this pause after the sermon so you get to think about it.
Oh, cool.
But it's in silence. And so it's not like a discussion of, oh, what do you think about this older person? Or what do you think about this person from wherever? And, but as an extreme extrovert, I think that's what I want, like discussion and interaction. But then a lot of our congregation I know are the opposite. And so having room and space for them to think is quite beautiful. So it's interesting that you bring that up. Like discipleship from the pulpit is quite an interesting balance and can be a beautiful thing because I listen to a lot of podcasts, you listen to a lot of podcasts, and you can't really talk to the podcast, it just talks to you.
Well, and so you how can. Do you...
Yeah, that's true. But then you look like a freak on the bus.
And they don't hear
you. Or maybe not, because you've got a hands-free phone, sure. Like, you can't tell me what to do, podcast.
Yeah.
But, and because I live in a non-English-speaking country, that'd be fine.
Yeah.
But how do you learn from a podcast? You have to figure out the way you learn the best. You have to figure out how to use that in the next few days to, like, get it in there. And so maybe discipling from the pulpit has to be two-thirds information and one-third, how do you get this information to interact with your internals so that you keep it. Yeah. And Jesus did that all the time.
Sure.
He would give you application. And so, but then Jesus also walked alongside with his disciples, his apostles,
mm.
doing life with them. And some of the best times of my life of being discipled or by being a discipler have mm-hmm. been those moments that I walk alongside people and see them at their worst and get to talk them through it, or seeing them at their best and get to, like, encourage and solidify that in them.
Mm-hmm.
But, and I think it's, yes, it's my position in life for the last 10 years that it's been difficult to have a discipler.
Sure.
Or a mentor, because I'm moving around so much and I'm in a weird place. But have you often had mentors?
Very rarely.
And why do you think that is?
Well, in a way, it's because I'm independent sometimes to a fault. I think there have definitely been times throughout my life where I've been going through something where I would have benefited completely by having a mentor in my life, but I didn't necessarily want to open up to anybody, or if I was given the chance, I didn't take it up. And there have been times where people have offered, if I wanted to get together and catch up every now and then, and I've taken them up at times, and at others I haven't. But I think for the most part, my understanding, probably my wrong understanding, has been that you grow and develop by yourself. If it's something that's happening internally, it's something that you deal with yourself. It's between you and God. It's not necessarily to involve other people. And I think that's wrong. But also, it's been the nature of the environments I've found myself in growing up. I haven't often had a lot of input from people outside of my own family, so in a way it's definitely been good to have my parents' input on certain things and to have their example in how to walk with Jesus. But when it comes to active discipleship, it's been very rare in my life. I think the only things I can think of are teachers at school. They've often taken on that role for me a little bit, but it has only been in small pieces, and I haven't been very vulnerable, or wasn't very vulnerable growing up with my teachers.
Yep.
So I don't think I benefited from their influence as much as I should have, or at least could have. And even when I was in YWAM for 4.5-5 years, I found it difficult. I actually found it quite isolating, if I'm honest. I didn't feel like there was anybody that showed an interest in mentoring me, because a lot of older guys specifically were mentoring other guys, and I just didn't feel like anybody had room for me, so I didn't feel like I could ask anybody, and as a result, I didn't really have any active discipleship for at least 2 years being in a YWAM context. And when I did, it was rare. It was helpful, but it was still rare. I didn't seek it out, and nobody really sought it out for me. So it was an environment where it was expected that you would seek out your own mentor, as opposed to mentors seeking out their disciples. So I think it's awkward for both parties to have that conversation. Why? But, well, I think on both ends of the spectrum, you could find excuses. You could say, I don't have enough time to take on another person or to have lunch with another person once a week. But it's obviously a lie, because most people can fit that into their schedule, especially if you're already going to be having lunch. But
I love lunch.
Yeah, lunch is great. But when it comes to being the disciple, I found it awkward because it was a very vulnerable thing for me to do, to ask for help. especially when it came to my spiritual development, I didn't feel like I felt exposed when when I asked somebody, and I was afraid that they would say that they didn't have time, or if they did say yes, that it would be reluctant, or I would sense some kind of hesitation, and then that would, and even times where it's been out of obligation, like when I've been assigned a mentor, that hasn't always been the it was better than nothing, but it wasn't the best, I think.
Yeah,
I think it would have been more beneficial for me to have somebody who wanted to see me grow. Does that make sense?
Yep, very much.
Okay.
What was it like on your DTS, though?
So I had a one-on-one, a staff member who was mentoring me, who was... He's a great guy. He's a sweet guy. He was going through a lot of stuff himself, though. So I think that was... in some ways, me understanding that he was needing to see breakthrough in certain areas, whether or not I shared those areas, I think that helped me to realize that he wasn't just a brick wall that I was talking to. He was somebody that actually had feelings and was processing things for himself. And on the other hand, it was difficult because I knew that, because I think because there were areas that he was growing in that I felt I was further along than him in, that was kind of that pride was preventing me from actually viewing the relationship as what it should have been.
Yep.
So it was tricky. He felt more like a friend, I think, than a mentor. It felt like a friend that you just catch up with. Okay, with that in mind, yep.
What do you think a mentor should be in, like, the power dynamic?
Yeah, right, okay, because you could have a teacher and a student. That's one. That's one format, I suppose. And I guess that was kind of what Jesus was to his disciples. I don't know how many of them were older than him, though. I guess that's something I've never really thought about.
Oh, true.
I mean, if you were 10 years older than a guy that claimed to be the Messiah, would you follow him? And if so, would you ever look down on him for not being as experienced as you?
And I think that's also cultural. Like, on my DTS, all of my leaders except one were women, and one of them was younger than me by a long shot.
Yep.
And I think culturally I could have easily been like, oh, discounting this.
Yeah.
But I didn't. And then that served me well for the rest of my first 3 years in YWAM, because all of my leaders continued to be women, and some of them were younger than me. And so I wonder if age back then meant anything, or if it was just your credentials or your ability to dialogue.
Well, I wonder if Jesus's charisma or presence kind of superseded that.
Yep, which could be quite straightforward. But then the other thing is, have you had side-by-side mentors that you chose? Like with the DTS guy, he was chosen for you and it became like a friendship side-to-side, but not really.
Mm-hmm.
Have you had many that you're like, oh, we're in the same position and you're definitely mentoring me and I'm kind of mentoring you?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think they have been the most wholesome, I think, types of discipleship moments that I've had throughout my life. And I can think of a couple guys when I was at YWAM Newcastle that were very... They were a similar age to me, maybe a little bit older, but we were peers, and there were times where they were going through something that I helped them with, and there were times that I was going through something they helped me with. And the ability to open up with somebody who I trusted, who I also viewed as spiritually mature, that was invaluable to me. Absolutely. So
Yeah.
Yeah, I really appreciated that, but I think, and again, this is going back to me kind of being a little bit afraid of rejection, but also feeling like I need to be independent. It's been hard for me to seek out an older mentor and to take them seriously, even when they when they have been actively discipling me, for me to not just try and see their flaws so that it would make me feel better about the fact that my flaws were being exposed. Because that's the wrong attitude to have, but that happened a few times. But I mean, eventually, I think especially in 2017, in my last year at YWAM, there was one guy who took me under his wing. He was 7-8 years older than me. It's not you, but at times I feel like you and I have a bit of the peer-to-peer.
I definitely agree.
Thing going on, but this other guy, he was somebody that I grew up in the same town as him, and I was aware of him. He was aware of me, but the age difference meant that he kind of knew my older brother, but not really. And he was just great. The fact that we had similar upbringings in the same place meant that we not only were able to connect on that, but I felt I could trust him. He felt familiar. It wasn't like it was a person I'd only just met. It was somebody that I'd known of at least for 10 years. So at that point, I felt like having him there was, I was able to open up, knowing that not only was he older than me, but he was, I think my mindset was different for him somehow, that I saw who he used to be when he was a teenager. Not that I saw very much of him, but as an adult, I had so much respect for him, and the fact that he took me under his wing, it felt incredible. I felt like I grew a lot, and I think even thinking about his mentorship encourages my spirit a little bit. I think that's what discipleship is supposed to be. It's not supposed to be this, there was this guy that talked to me a few times and it was a little bit awkward. We weren't really on the same page about things, but I think if you're really taking discipleship seriously, you make an effort to get on the same page with the person that you're mentoring, so that you're not talking down to them. But even if you are more mature and you are coming at things from a more experienced point of view, you are coming down to their level, seeing eye to eye with them. And it's kind of like what you do when you're hanging out with a kid, or if you're trying to teach a kid a lesson, you don't stand over them and look down at them and say, you should have done this, or this is what this means. You crouch down, you get on their level, and you look at them eye to eye and you say, let me teach you something. And then that's kind of, it's healthy, I guess.
And then you reward them with candies, right?
Exactly. And that's what this guy at Wyoming Newcastle did. And that I think was the main thing that got me through it.
Oh, candies.
Mm-hmm. What about you? Have you had much?
I can guess who it is.
Yeah. Have you had much active discipleship? I think, okay, so you already said that you had some on your DCS in YWAM, but also, I imagine, throughout the rest of your time in YWAM. But what about before that? So from your mid-20s backwards, did you have much active discipleship outside of your parents?
And it was a lot of either seeing them once every month or two, because there were some youth leaders in Sydney that I would see often that were quite good at just talking me through things.
Yep.
My brother, before he moved to New Zealand, was very good at that. And even when he came back from New Zealand. But then there was this guy called Luke, who was pseudo youth leader at our church. Like, he was studying and he had the time for it. So he led us in some things, but also was super chill about other people doing things.
Yep.
But he would go up and back to Sydney quite often to help with them.
Mm-hmm.
And he would just chuck me in the car and take me places. And so we would have 3 hours there and back to talk about music, and he was studying science and I was doing whatever I was doing. And then we would talk about faith because we were reading similar books, and that was quite helpful because he would give me things to do and would encourage me to take on responsibility for certain things. And he was trying to get me to use music to reach out to people, which was heaps encouraging.
Mm-hmm.
And then he moved to the opposite side of the country, so I didn't see him so much. And so there were people like that that were in and out at different moments.
Yep.
Which was quite healthy, because it wasn't like, hey, do you want to be my mentor? No. Yeah. Because he was. And then when I moved out of home, because I was jumping around different churches, I had the leader of this house church movement that I was a part of. He was quite good at walking me through things. And then his offsider that was actually leading our house group attempted it. But because we didn't really have a friendship beforehand, it was just like me using him for different moments, but not really walking alongside with him.
Mm. Yeah.
Which the first guy, the main guy, I still link up with him every so often online.
Yep.
But the other guy, we just didn't stay connected.
Yeah.
So that's weird too, when you have these intimate relationships that don't last after the business end of it.
Mm. I think what you hit on there is the fact that in a disciple and mentor relationship, it's important that both parties care about the other.
Yeah.
Because otherwise you're in the relationship either selfishly or for some other nefarious purpose.
Yep.
Yeah, and that's something that is crucial to a healthy mentor relationship. And I can think of a couple in my experience in over the last 5 years or so that there was a sense of obligation on the part of the mentor to disciple me. And it wasn't so much that showed, but I could kind of sense it. I could sense that it had come around on their calendar and they'd looked at what to do today and they thought, all right, it's time to go for a walk with Ryan and check in on things, which is fine.
Yeah.
And that's good. But I think, it was helpful, but at times I felt like I wasn't being receptive because I didn't necessarily sense that the other person cared deeply about me. They cared, but they didn't care deeply. At least it didn't feel like they cared enough that they would follow up once that official mentoring relationship kind of ended. And so that's kind of where that led. But I did have experiences, and I want to hear yours too, about times where, or the importance that being a mentor has had in my life. There was a few people that I can think of while I was at YWAM Newcastle as a staff member who came through as a student, who most of the time they were 18, 19. And that was fantastic because I was in my early to mid 20s, and so I was able to, I was a few years further along, and so I was able to help them through some things that I'd gone through a few years previous, and kind of bring them up to speed on some of those different areas. And I can think of one particular guy, and I think you met him. Did you meet Josh Calaguire?
Yeah.
He's a fantastic guy. He's
agreed.
Amazing. I love that guy. He's currently with his wife at YWAM in Mazatlan, Mexico.
Nice.
And when he came to do his discipleship training school, he had grown up in a Christian home, but he didn't really believe it. And
yep.
he kind of come to check it out because one of his brothers had done it, and he wanted to know if it was for real. And
yep.
I didn't even know that. And I had him on my first podcast that was kind of the building block for this, and I just had him on there to talk about his life, and it basically got to the end of his quote-unquote testimony, and he just said, and I don't know if I believe any of it. And I went, oh, wow. Okay, that's... Oh, okay. I thought you were going to say something different there, but great.
Yeah.
Okay, I can work with this. And over the course of about 3 months, it went from him being a fun, outgoing, friendly guy who really liked to take time and think hard about things, which I think is amazing. If you can get... I mean, you're like that too. You love being around people, but also there are times where you like to be alone and just think about things.
With a big old ham sandwich.
Exactly. Nothing beats a ham sandwich.
Nope.
So, with Josh, we connected over various different things, and one of the things was C.S. Lewis's science fiction trilogy, which is fascinating. I love it. It's Out of the Silent Planet, Perelandra, and That Hideous Strength. And so at one point, he didn't really have much interest in reading it at that time, but I was reading through it, and I started talking to him about the story, and he said, I don't care about spoilers, just tell me everything. And so I was able to walk him through these different, essentially, theological concepts that are outlined in these books, and yep. my take on them as they unfolded and as I read them. And he was just enraptured. He loved it. And I found out a couple of years later that he went out and read those books. I think he got them for himself because he loved the story so much. But it was little moments like that, and going for a walk and just talking about life and different things like that, where I was able to help him through some of his the things that he was going through that I myself had gone through, to do with doubting whether or not the things that I'd grown up believing were true, or
yep.
believing whether or not the Bible is true, or whether or not healing happens today. And I had him on an episode of my old podcast right before he went on his 3 month outreach, and we were talking about healing and whether or not it happens in the modern day, or whether it was just in the Bible. And it got to the end of that, and a couple of my other friends and I, we'd shared stories about when we'd seen it happen firsthand, and he just said, yeah, I've never seen it, I don't know if I ever will, I don't know if I believe it. And then 3 months later, he came back from outreach, and he was just, he could not stop talking and testifying about all the miracles of healing that he had seen taken place at his own yep. hand while on outreach in Mexico. And I could not believe my ears, I could not believe my eyes, and just to see the transformation that guy undertook over the course of that 6 months, and seeing him yep. go from where he was to where he ended up was just... It has been one of the most fulfilling things of my adult life so far.
Yeah, nice.
Mm-hmm. What about yourself? Have you had any profound or influential mentoring experiences with anyone else that you like to share about? Share?
Mm-hmm. I think I'm up to 7 now. In the 7 DTSs I've helped with,
yep.
You meet some people that you're like, almost, this is just business. Like, I'll talk you through this school, and I'll assess you, and I'll point you in the right direction, but ultimately there's not much connection.
Sure.
And then there's other people who I'm friends with to this day,
mm-hmm.
Even not in a mentor relationship, just in a friendship thing, and yep. also in a... what did you say before? Like a... co-mentorship.
Peer? Yeah.
Peer, that's the word you said. Peer. One of which is this guy called Justin, who lives in Canada.
Yep.
And he came to DTS as a 18-year-old purple pants wearing mohawk having farm kid.
Yep.
And so we didn't have heaps naturally in common, although now we have heaps. And he was going through this a similar thing. Like, he'd grown up a farm kid, he'd gone to a Baptist church all his life, and he wasn't sure exactly what he believed, but he wanted to figure it out. Mm-hmm. And so we would have these one-on-ones where he would just ask these questions that I was like, these are such good questions. And he's like, am I allowed to ask these questions? And I'm like, yeah. And I started feeding him different books that he'd get excited about. And he didn't go on outreach with me, but the lecture phase was with me the whole time.
Yep.
And then he went home, and I went to Canada to photograph a wedding and saw him. And the relationship has just gone up and up and up and up. And then he came back on staff for 2 years, and he took on this huge building project. And you would see him be victorious and be frustrated and not want to be there anymore, and then find his wife, and then they got married, and then they moved, and blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm.
And so getting to do life, even if it's just through Skype now and iMessage,
yep.
The mentoring that we've given each other, because we just have that trust and that space to ask whatever we want,
yep.
is incredible. And I think my own reasons for not chasing down my own mentor is, one, because I haven't been in a church for that long with older men mm-hmm. that I trust theologically. It's yeah. not even a social thing anymore. It's just I think we come at this from different angles, and I don't think you could push me in the direction I want to be pushed.
Mm.
Or I just don't like the Skype thing
yeah.
with that kind of mentor relationship, and the linguistics of this place makes it interesting. And so it's not even a rejection thing for me anymore. It's like, but what if we start talking and I disagree with everything you say and it's not even effective, then that's wasting both of our times.
Right.
So that's weird. But so, the reason I brought this up to talk about it, I think, is because I think mentoring and discipleship do so much good, and Jesus told us to do it because a lot of different reasons, but his discipleship of the apostles was so powerful that they went on to lead and build the church to a huge number and mm-hmm. a huge influence. And I think the idea that church now is you coming to a space, singing some songs, listening to one guy say an uncomfortably generic speech that may make you feel nice, but most people don't take it away into their lives.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that's what church is meant to be. I think church is supposed to be this powerful, life-changing community that takes love to the streets. And so I'm just curious why that doesn't happen. Because in this country, mm-hmm. when I talk to pastors, they want it. They want discipleship. They want to know how to do it. They want their people in their churches to be discipled. But because a lot of them are first generation Christians, you're never really sure, or they're not really sure how to do it, or what it looks like, or what it could be.
Yeah.
And I think especially a place like this could really use some great discipleship. Some intentional discipleship.
Yeah.
Which is also reflected in the recent uptake of people becoming life coaches, which is just a fancy way for a discipler,
yeah.
I think, or mentor. And it seems to be working for a lot of people, which is great.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think that is an indication that it's a natural desire for most people to have somebody to look up to and have and help them through things.
Yep.
Yeah. I really think it should happen more, and I think it'll be good for all of us to keep an eye out for whether or not they're younger people or not, that we can mm-hmm. have some kind of influence on through the relationships. Yep. Influence in a good way, and not for our own selfish reasons, because they will be able to tell that. And if they can't, then God can. So I think yep. that's something to keep in mind. But like you said, it is, sometimes it's difficult if you don't have shared interests or necessarily shared life experiences. But I suppose you can work through that, and you can have shared life experiences together. It doesn't have to be a perfect match right from the get-go, but I'm sure if it's good and if it's right, if you're supposed to be doing it, then things will work out one way or the other. I mean, you look at any superhero story and you have the superhero being influenced by an older mentor, and the older mentor inevitably dies to push them forward, but before they die, they are always saying things like, you have a responsibility, with great power comes great responsibility, you should use your powers for good, help people, this type of thing. Now, without those people, these superheroes wouldn't have gone on to do great things. And I think that's something to bear in mind. If Uncle Ben never had any mentor impact on Spider-Man's life, then Spider-Man wouldn't have happened. It would have just been Peter Parker with heightened senses, and New York would be terrorized to this day.
Unbelievable. Come on, Peter Parker, do your job.
I know.
Be mentored.
Exactly. And so, I guess this whole episode obviously wasn't 100% based on the Bible. It was grounded in the Bible, but not necessarily. We didn't quote scripture throughout, but like you said, Jesus tells people to make disciples. Jesus himself made disciples. Elijah, the prophet, had a disciple named Elisha who went on to bigger and better things than his mentor. All throughout the Bible we have examples. Moses and Joshua, a whole bunch of people that have it's a natural progression. If you have wisdom from God, if you have experience to share, it is natural and good and healthy to find somebody to share and impart that wisdom to. If you are younger, you should be looking for those people with experiences who want to share their wisdom, so that you don't have to make the same mistakes they did, and so that you can grow from where they stopped. There's a line in Star Wars Episode 8, The Last Jedi, which is it's had a divided reception, but there is a line that Yoda says to Luke when he says, "We are what they grow beyond," and that's kind of stuck with me, because it's a truth about the discipleship process, that as a mentor, those that you disciple will grow beyond where you are. Your ceiling will be their floor. They will stand on your shoulders, like that type of thing. And I think it would be good and healthy, myself not having a mentor currently, in where I am physically, it would be good for me to seek one out. Or failing that, in addition to that, seeking out people that I can have some influence on. And I would like to see more of that in the church. You?
I want to see more of it in the church.
Mm-hmm.
And do more of it. And multiply a lot of it.
Mm-hmm.
Because, the whole thing of ceiling and floor that you said, what if the next three generations does that real intentionally? Then you get a sweet church.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. That'd be great.
A sweet, sweet church.
Okay, Jeremy. Well, with that said, before we end this episode, I just wanted to tell the listeners that we have discussions like this quite regularly over on our subsidiary podcast, Scripture Discussed, which is through our Patreon. It's in the episode description. You can just click through there if you are interested in becoming a member of the Patreon community, and you get this episode every couple of weeks.